Hello, friends. It's me, Alice Slater, and I'm here with my friend and business partner.
It's me, Bethany Rutter.
We're doing a little role reversal for this episode because I'm up to my schemes and dreams.
Yeah, but also you've literally never done it.
I've never done it. I don't know. I just get nervous.
Well, I'm the one that owns the recorder, so I'm the one that turns it on. Yeah, it's literally because the recorder is mine and I press play on the recorder because I know how to use it. It's not because I have any specific knowledge about how to say hello.
It's true. Anyway.
Would you like to tell us about our episode today?
Yeah, so basically, we have been asked many times if we would consider doing a poetry episode. And we have resisted.
For a few reasons.
I would say I read maybe 3 or 4 collections maximum a year. And Bert, how many would you say you read?
On average, 0 per year.
On average, 0.
Last year I read one.
What did you read last year?
I actually read a collection called Happiness by Jack Underwood, which I bought because I once met him at a party and he was very good at karaoke. He did a very good Roy Orbison karaoke thing like 2014 or something. And he has a really cute kid, so I'm like well disposed to him and would like him to succeed. So I bought his poetry collection, which is published by Faber, therefore has at least a reasonable expectation that it'll be good, you know?
I think that is as legit a reason as any to pick up and read a poetry collection.
And it was great. But yeah, until this was the only poetry I had ever bought and ever read. I mean, since I was at school. I'd never bought poetry before.
That is so wild to me.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anyway, but this is like a judgment-free zone. And we've decided, basically, the best way to approach discussing poetry when so many people feel so unsure on their feet when thinking about and talking about poetry, that I thought it'd be really fun to talk about poems that have gone viral.
Yeah. Poems through the lens of the internet, or at least through virality. What are you up to?
To shift in. I don't want to shift over you.
That's okay.
Okay, so what I've got, I crowdsourced on twitter.com.
Never heard of it.
I recommend it. It's absolute fucking hell. Yeah. But I am addicted now and I want to take you down with me.
Okay.
So I asked on twitter.com for some, if anyone could just crowdsourcing, like what poetry has gone viral over the last sort of year, 2 years. I got a list. I sent my dear friend Bethany a digital anthology and also for the longer poems, the physical copies, marked with very cute little panda stickers so she knew exactly where she was going. And what we're going to do is I've written down the name of each poem on a little piece of paper and we're going to pick them at random from a dish which I'm holding in my little paw.
From which you just ate some cake.
Which I just ate some delicious rose and pistachio cake made by Bethany's mother.
True.
And then we're just going to spitball and see what happens. And
you love spitballing.
I fucking love it. But I think especially one of the reasons why I feel like poetry is an intimidating thing to talk about is because I think we often feel like if we're not sure if we don't feel anything, then we're not sure what to say.
Yes.
I think it took me a long time to understand that that is the same as any other fucking book. Sometimes you read something and you are not moved by it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's bad. Doesn't mean it's good either, though. Like, it just didn't touch you.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is, like, a fun, accessible way to us, you know, to, like, start...
Get our poetic juices flowing.
Yeah, talking about poetry.
Yeah, I'm down. Okay.
You can pick the first little
doo-doo. Okay. Milk and Honey, what a place to start.
Perfect.
So we've actually talked about Milk and Honey before, but a long time ago.
In our private lives or on the pod?
Or on the pod.
Have we? When did we talk about Milk and Honey?
We talked about it. This is a deep cut. We talked about it on the Hello Friend episode with you, so not even on what page are you on.
Oh, shit.
I think that's where we talked about it for the first time. You were talking about it as like a bookseller having never seen poetry move in these volumes before. Tell me about Milk and Honey.
All right, so Milk and Honey, I consider to be like one, it is a trailblazer. First of its kind. It is an American Punjabi poet called Rupi Kaur. If you haven't heard of Milk and Honey, you're probably not online enough for us to be friends.
You don't listen to this podcast, is what we're saying.
Most of the poems are super short and illustrated. And she's basically talking about love, sex, abuse, rape, nitty-gritty emotional shit. And I feel like there has been a real arc in feeling regarding this collection.
Yeah, agree.
Because I feel like we've kind of gone from it being something that everyone was very vocally in favour of and did not want to criticise. Then we had an Emperor's New Clothes phase where people said, actually, it's not that fucking good. It's quite naive and a bit silly. And I think that was directly related to the fact that she revealed that she was not writing from experience. She was, a lot of the abuse she talks about was not her own abuse that she had experienced, which we will come back to again in this episode. And then I personally feel that now to mention Milk and Honey as a collection you like is kind of letting your knickers show a little bit.
Best of the Beatles.
Yeah, exactly. I have more to say, but I want to hear what you think of this collection. Or of this poet.
Yeah, I don't know. I think sometimes I read poems of this genre and I just think that's a fucking tweet. Like, that's literally a tweet. Like,
a Tumblr post.
Yeah, which is fine. But I don't know. I don't know if it's fine. I feel like this also went through another thing with allegedly maybe being plagiarized itself. Not just it wasn't her own experience, but that some of the poems were actively plagiarized. So this is actually one that it's not just that I don't know how I feel about it, like artistically. Like I don't know if I respond to the poems and if that's okay for me to not respond to the poems. Yeah, I just feel like there's so much with this collection. Like, it really has been, like, a weird kind of gnarly beast. But, you know, just, like, okay, so I just open on a random page. The idea that we are, line break, so capable of love, line break, but still choose to be line break, but still choose line break to be toxic. Like, I feel like that's a tweet, you know? A lot of this is just...
I mean, that's why it went viral, though, because that's also an Instagram post, yeah. You know?
And that was something that we talked about a lot, was, like, this is very visually Instagrammable.
But that's right. So I put little panda post-its on two poems. One is, the next time he points out the hair on your legs is growing back, remind that boy your body is not his home. He is a guest. Warn him to never outstep his welcome again. So I put a little panda post-it on that because in some regards that's quite basic. You know, like, it's saying men don't have the right to tell you how to take care of your own body. Imagine reading that when you were 15, though.
Yeah. Maybe it just isn't for me and that's okay.
That's the thing that I think kind of bothers me about the discourse about this collection is that now that we've decided it's acceptable to mock it, I think we're kind of turning our backs on who it's for.
Yeah.
It's acceptable to mock things that teenage girls like.
Yeah.
And that's who this collection is for.
Yeah, like, maybe because I'm reading it and I'm like, I don't respond to this. I don't think it's particularly, like, I don't know, it's lacking something for me. That's fine because it isn't for me in the first place. And I don't want to be one of those people that's like, everything is for my consumption and I don't know. Yeah, I think it's fine. I don't think it's like necessarily like a negative thing in the world, you know?
The one thing I will say about it is I think it's way too long. And if it had been edited a little bit so that some of the tweets were taken out.
What tweets?
The poems that feel like they could just be
tweets. Oh, right, yeah.
If it was just edited a little so that it was stronger and less diluted, I think perhaps we would have a slightly different view of it.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it just does feel too kind of sprawling and random and also like...
But yeah, I know, I feel like this has ended up becoming like the embodiment of Instagram poetry.
Yeah.
Which should be a really exciting thing and instead has been reduced to just a vague, shitty thing that we laugh at.
Yeah.
And that annoys me.
Yeah, I don't think it's like... a bad thing in the world, is basically my take on it. Is like, it may not be for me, but I don't think it's doing like a great deal of harm, unless it is plagiarizing black women writers.
Which is a whole thing, which I wish I had remembered to research for this episode, because we are going to talk about plagiarism. And just the poetry world has a problem.
Yeah.
And if there are like poets who are suffering, whose work is suffering because of this collection,
especially black female poets, of which there are,
do something about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my take in a nutshell. My only major beef with it as an entity in the world is if it's plagiarized. Otherwise, I just accept that it is not something for me. Bottom line, Alice, take your pick.
Okay. The next poem is Rape Joke by Patricia Lockwood.
Author of, I think, her most famous work.
My favourite.
The single Portobello Mushroom.
The Jonathan Franzen, I'm Pregnant.
I assume most people that are listening will know about this tweet, but Patricia Lockwood did a very good tweet making fun of Jonathan Franzen. That's what I know her from.
She also was a very early adopter. My husband claims that she invented it. I cock a brow at that, but saying sexed before a weird tweet.
Interesting. Well, you know, if it was her, good for you.
Yeah, good on you, bitch.
But that's what I mostly know Patricia Lockwood from, is... Did she also do Is Paris Any Good?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is...
Paris Review.
Yeah. So, yeah, I feel like I know her from Twitter for being good on Twitter.
And hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this, I think, I didn't kind of connect the dots for quite a while. And, yeah, she also wrote a poem called Rape Joke that went viral.
I didn't know that she wrote that.
She certainly did.
Yeah. Until I was doing this episode, I did not know that.
We can't read it out, it's too long, but if you are not familiar with the poem, the pattern of it is the poet describing an assault and highlighting all of the things about it that were either ridiculous or just true. So, for example, the rape joke wore a goatee. What do you think of this poem?
Yeah, I was into it. I felt like it did something interesting. I felt it was the appropriate length and form for expressing this. I didn't feel like this was a tweet. Yeah, I really like this.
Still relevant as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of reclaiming the disc house.
So yeah, I felt like what I liked about this, which is maybe what I didn't respond to as much with Milk and Honey, is like this feels both personal and universal, whereas that felt just universal.
And
I don't feel like poets or any kind of artist has to put personal shit into their work for it to be meaningful, especially not when it's about something like sexual assault. But yeah, it felt like it was truthful. I responded to it. I've respected this poem.
Me too. And I have read it many times over the years. It sticks out in the collection for me as well, which I know that you probably didn't have time to read.
I didn't. And like, I was reading the back of the book and I was just like, ugh. Like the shit that's written on the back, I'm like, this is trying so hard. Whereas I felt like that poem wasn't.
So the back of the book says, what if a deer did porn? Is America going down on Canada? What happens when Niagara Falls gets drunk at a wedding? Is it legal to marry a stuffed owl exhibit? You know what it makes me think of? It kind of makes me think of David Sedaris.
Yeah.
But it also makes me think of a short story collection. Like, posing every scenario within the collection as a what-if question.
Yeah.
Is very short fiction.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just like, I don't care about any of that shit. Just, whereas I found I did care about that poem.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? And I guess it certainly shows that this was published before the poem went viral.
Yeah. Because it doesn't sell this collection on the basis of that poem at all, which it should. It's from a collection called Motherland, Fatherland, Homeland Sexuals. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Your turn.
Okay, I'm taking the next poem. The next poem is from Who is Mary Sue by Sophie Collins, which I feel like is a collection that has been shared and talked about more than any collection since Milk and Honey on my Twitter world. And that's because I follow a lot of, like, you know, discerning London white ladies. But, like, yeah, I feel like this is definitely the collection that I've heard the most chat about.
How would you sum up the total poem?
Not a poem.
Interesting.
Well, yeah, because I was like, oh, I don't feel like this is a poem. And then I read the blurb, and it does kind of own the fact that a lot of what is in this collection is not poetry.
Part poetry, part reportage.
Yeah, which I liked, because I read that and I was like, I read the poem, well, I read that bit first, and I was like, oh, I didn't know that poetry could be so unlike what I understand poetry to be. And then I read that and I was like, okay, good. Even the publishers don't claim that, because it is literally just short prose.
I think the line, though, between poetry and prose is often blurred.
Yeah.
I guess this is the thing with poetry, isn't it? Is that there are endless different forms. I mean, again, like, we are, as I like to say, spitballing. And I'd love to know if anyone has any opinions on whether or not you could class Who is Mary Sue as a poem. I mean, then, yeah, you end up with, like, interview questions from interview answers, rather, and quotes from female authors.
Yeah, because, like, would you say that that's a line break? It's just the end of a sentence, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, are you thinking about line breaks and enjambment as different things? Because that is a line break. A line break is when you have a gap between lines. Enjambment is where you have a jump between sentences. So, like, at the beginning. There we go. Okay, on this page, that is a line break.
Yeah.
That is enjambment. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. I want to say enjambment.
I know what you mean, but I feel like that is just a block of text, and then that's a block of text, but that isn't. Yeah.
Yeah, so this gap is the line break. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about when I say line break. It's just the gap between two lines. Whereas enjambment is when you have a new line starts in the middle of a sentence, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What, so, like, you think that's a poem because this carries on?
Oh, no, I don't think that's why I define it as a poem.
Okay.
But I just think when we're talking about narrative form, that is something for me that you wouldn't put in reportage.
But then, like, this, like, that's literally, which is the part of the same thing, right? This is all part of the same.
Yeah, it's all part of the same
work. Like, this is just straight up, like, prose, right? Prose. Okay, just checking that we are on the same page about this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. It was interesting. So this, it's like the title section, Who is Mary Sue, from Sophie Collins' collection. And it's just this section that looks in various forms at the idea of this Mary Sue character idea. That a Mary Sue is like a character trope that is an idealized version of the author, which is particular to women's writing, that we read women's writing believing that their characters, especially their, like, protagonists, are idealized version of themselves. And it's often used in conjunction with fan fiction.
So aside from the is it, isn't it narrative form of this piece, did you like it? Did
yes,
it speak to you?
I did like it.
Did you dig it?
I did dig it. I thought it was interesting.
I dug it.
But I thought maybe I'm digging it because it doesn't seem like poetry. You know, I was like, is this just responding to my, like, lack of knowledge and interest in poetry in general? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, is it just interesting because it's interesting words presented as, like, pretty straight up prose, you know?
I guess that kind of comes back to what I'm saying about, like, the way that we think of poetry. Because you wouldn't look at a novella and say, do I just like this because it's about cool queer kids in Greenland? Or do I like it because it's written in this, like, short choppy, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We wouldn't examine narrative so closely.
Yeah. I don't know, yeah.
I get you. I think it's not something that I would necessarily, like, worry about.
Yeah.
You know, I'd bring up, like, look at the poem, which we're not discussing today, but was mentioned as a viral poem. Frank O'Hara, Having a Coke with You.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of prose.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, you could read that as flash fiction.
True.
It has a rhythm to it.
Yeah, maybe I'm just, like, because I don't feel experienced or knowledgeable at quite a lot of different forms that are not literally, like, novels. or a short novel, aka a novella. Like, even short stories, I'm like, I don't really know how to, like, think and talk about them. I'm just like, oh my god, if I hadn't offered you that cake earlier, the last words that my husband said to me before he left the house were, there are plums in the fridge. I know, and I was like, on today of all days, on today of all days, there are plums in the fridge, and I'm going to get them out for us. There are plums in the icebox.
Text him and tell him, we have eaten the plums in the fridge that you were probably saving for later, except you made the mistake of telling us about them, so we ate them, assuming it was an invitation for us to eat them.
It was an invitation. Tell our friends at home, in case they don't spend as much time on the internet as us.
Well, no, because that poem will... Okay, well, we can just... This is a good intro to discuss Carlos Williams. So if you are extremely offline, in which case we can't be friends, you will not be aware of the fact that a poem called This Is Just To Say has become a meme. Are you familiar with and do you enjoy This Is Just To Say?
Yeah.
It's one of my favourite... But even before it became a meme.
Yeah.
It's one of my favourite poems. I love it.
Mmm.
Are we allowed to eat plums on the poetry episode?
Let's eat our plums and then return to the thought. And we're back.
This is just to say
we have eaten the plums that were in the icebox. So yeah, back on this poem. Yeah, I like it. I think it's like sweet and romantic.
I love it. It's yeah. Just simple and says so much while saying so little.
Agree.
And I think that's why it captured people's imaginations.
I think it's, you know, thematically very similar to the Frank O'Hara drinking a Coke with you, you know? I don't know. They're about different things, but I feel like I get why both of those have much captured the Twitter imagination.
I think, like, the William Carlos Williams one, though, has captured the imagination in a much more, like, standard meme format.
Yeah, that's definitely a meme. Whereas, like, drinking a Coke with you is just very nice and popular.
Yeah.
True.
I didn't put in our little dish of poems because we read it at our wedding.
Yeah.
And I have the other poem that I read that was read for us by my brother at our wedding. My wedding to my husband, not my wedding to Bert, is on this little plate. So I was like, it's not all about me.
Sometimes.
Sometimes it is about me.
And that's okay. Should we take another one?
Yes.
Whose is it?
You
go.
Okay. To the woman crying uncontrollably in the next stall.
Who is this by Kim Adonizio?
Yes.
I feel like this has flared up very recently. Do you know why?
No idea. Like, I saw Sinead Gleeson. Posted it.
Yeah, I feel like maybe I'd seen it very soon before that. I don't know if that was the first time I'd seen it online.
Again, though, it is one like that just crops up. And like sometimes I think when people post something that we have all seen before, it is like chasing the waves of fabs and retweets.
Yeah.
With this poem, I think it just genuinely hits people and knocks them for six.
Yeah. Yeah. It's delightful. That's one I like.
It's so well realised.
Yeah.
And I love the fact... So that's a great example of a poem that... A great use of enjambment.
Yes, agree.
I really hope I'm not saying that wrong.
Enjambement.
It's going to be irritating the shit out of people.
That's fine.
Also, our 15-minute conversation about whether or not Who Is Mary Sue is a poem.
Which, by the time you hear this, will not be 15 minutes. But, yeah.
It will be...
it will be edited down to something
with
more... my skills.
Deaf little fingers.
My nerd hacker skills.
Like that use of enjambment, that cutting to a new line halfway through. So each sentence, each new line starts with like the last two words of the previous sentence. So it flows really nicely.
Yeah, agree. I think in terms of form and content, that is a Italian chef kissing fingers emoji.
Yeah, it's a bangaroo.
Yeah, I see why it has captured people's imaginations. I feel like, yeah, a deservedly viral poem.
And I think, like, you can see the kind of the connection between these poems about, like, womanhood and girlhood and that complicated messiness of being
a
young person and finding your way. That's quite a nice natural jump, I think, from the kind of Rupi Kaur that isn't quite hitting it home anymore.
That would be nice. Yeah, it's true. It's more substantial.
Mm-hmm.
It... Yeah, it's that thing, you know, what I was saying about one of about the Patricia Lockwood poem. Like, I think I like things that are specific and universal.
Yeah.
I don't just want universal, because that could be like a inspirational quote against the sunset. I want like a specific yeah. thing, you know? And that's why, yeah, I like that one. So if you are not familiar with that one, I would advise looking it up. My turn to take from the dish. Ooh, beef.
Ooh, what is it?
The O'Toole McKibben's beef.
Beef, beef, beef.
Okay, so the origin of this beef is Ailey O'Toole. That's her name, right? Ailey yes. O'Toole, Ailey O'Toole.
I would say Ailey.
Ailey. I don't know anything about, like, poets in general. But this cropped up because, as all literary beef and intrigue does, it eventually makes its way to people outside of that world. Me. So I think it came about partly because this poet, Ailey O'Toole, was going to be the recipient of a fairly substantial poetry prize.
She had been shortlisted.
Okay, so she hadn't been, like, announced as a winner. Okay. She'd been shortlisted for a fairly substantial poetry prize, and I'm sure those don't come along every day.
I believe it was the pushcart.
Yes, I don't know what that is.
It's, like, online writing.
Okay.
But it's a biggie.
It's a biggie, and there is a decent amount of money in it mm-hmm. for you if you win. And around this announcement being made, another poet, Rachel McKibbins, tweeted basically saying, like, cool that this poet has been nominated for a pushcart for work that I did.
I hope we win,
yeah.
Which, by the way, spoken like a true poet.
Agree.
So, what happened was, an ex-classmate of Ailey O'Toole's came across this poem and recognised the last stanza and was like, where the fuck do I know that? So she googled it. And not only did Ailey O'Toole's poem Gunmetal come up, but also Rachel McKibben's poem, which I'm actually going to have to flick and find, because the collection, this beef was so massive that her publisher just sold out of books, and it's been out of stock for absolutely ages.
We only managed to get it today.
So yeah, basically, when this woman googled this stanza from the Ailey O'Toole poem, this poem, Three Strikes by Rachel McKibbins, also came up in the Google search. So she got in touch with the publishing house that was going to put out Ailey O'Toole's chapbook and said, I think you should know that this poem has been plagiarised. The publisher got in touch with Ailey O'Toole and said, like, what are you doing? And in a panic to try and, like, paper over this problem, she, off her own back, emailed the original poet, Rachel McKibbins, to say, there's been a mix-up, it was completely accidental, your collection Blood really touched me, and I guess somewhere in the mix I forgot to credit you properly, but it wasn't a total mix-up because I hoped it would, you know, this would cause a dialogue between our poems and blah blah blah.
Just some bullshit.
A lot of bullshit. And Rachel McKibbins, I think, they were dealing with it. It was being dealt with behind the scenes, trying to figure out what to do, and then this bloody pushcart nomination came out of the woodwork, so she went public.
The original poem is very good.
The original poem is beautiful.
And so obviously the copied poem is good, and it's almost like you see that somebody could get a lot of traction off this copied poem, because what they're copying is very good, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's how plagiarism...
Yeah.
That's how plagiarism works.
But then why didn't this author get loads of awards and shit for her writing? That's what I don't understand.
So there's lots of reasons. I mean, The Rumpus, who I believe also reviewed and published Ailey O'Toole, I might be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure they did, also reviewed this. I think there's lots of things you could examine, like Rachel McKibbins is a woman of colour.
Yeah.
And Ailey O'Toole is white.
Yeah.
Ailey O'Toole had the connections.
True. There's loads of things.
She had the money to submit, you know, because
it's almost as if this is a really good way of proving that, like, art is not meritocratic at all.
Yeah.
It's easier to get, like, fame and fortune for something that is plagiarizing than to be original and good in the first place, depending on who you are.
And I guess also, like, there is a lot of poetry in the world.
There is.
There's a lot. And I guess So I got, after reading about this case, I went like a deep dive into plagiarism in the poetry world. I got kind of obsessed with it. I am now an expert on the history of plagiarism in poetry over the last like 3 years. And there are so many stories. There was a Quebecois. The Quebecois poet laureate who recently passed away, like in the last 5 years. His collection was translated into English for the first time. And everyone was like, there are lines in here from like Maya Angelou. Not just like the odd
image.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like he was lifting lines from some of the most famous poems written in the English language. But then also, so you could argue that that was intentional, it's pastiche, it's an after. But then he also was lifting lines from poets like Rachel McKibbins. Not literally her, but...
small,
yeah, like contemporary poets. Career, yeah. Yeah, who haven't, like, made their name there yet. And
oh,
the ethics
so
of that man, like... And obviously, so this poet's passed away. That we'll never really get an answer to what he was, his intentions were, what he was doing. The publisher just pulled the collection. It was just shit for everyone involved.
Does that happen in fiction as much?
I mean...
Or is it harder to pin it down because it's going to be, like, embedded into something that's much longer?
I don't think it happens as much in fiction because we don't have the tradition of the after.
We talked about this in the pub, didn't we?
We did, around Christmas. So a poem, the after, is a type of poetry which is borrowing the style or substance of an established poem and writing a response to it, either reframing it or using that kind of structure to look at a different subject matter. And the tradition is you say after poem
blah, blah,
name.
Blah. Yeah.
That does not really exist in fiction, although yeah. Of course it has been done. Like, you could argue that The Pink Hotel is after Rebecca. You could argue that The Hunger Games is after Battle Royale. But I guess the strokes are so much broader and I think so much less personal.
Yeah.
Because, like, one of the things that Rachel McKibbins talked about in her thread about this plagiarism was the line that was taken from her work, was hell-spangled girl spitting teeth into the sink. And Ailie O'Toole's was ramshackle girl spitting teeth into the sink. And one thing that really upset her was that was a literal
thing.
That was
that
literal.
Happened, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a metaphor. And Ailie O'Toole was using it as a metaphor for pain and abuse. I don't think that like, level of literal experience is quite the same in fiction.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. No, this was a really, like, blatant, gnarly case. It was almost easier. Like, this was very clear-cut, I think. This was bad.
It was bad. But then, you know, Ailie O'Toole just disappeared.
Yeah.
Just deleted all her social media, disappeared. And obviously she herself was not a very well person. She has a history of mental illness, which doesn't excuse, like, it doesn't excuse the theft, but it adds more context to
yeah.
it. Like, we can't kind of vilify her as this, as, like, an evil entity of poetry stealing.
Yeah.
Amoral.
But yeah, we can ask, like, why is it easier for a young white poet to be recognised for work that was done by someone else in exactly the same way?
And, of course, it wasn't just Rachel McKibbins. Rachel
yeah.
McKibbins is the poet that's, like, the poster of this story, but when that poem went viral, Gunmetal, Ailie O'Toole's poem, loads of other poets came out of the woodwork and said, yep, I recognise that, that's from my poem, like, this stanza is mine, this line is mine.
It's
like,
wild that
it
you,
was prestige.
Like, it's wild, wild, wild that you wouldn't just... You'd almost identify as a poet without writing any poetry yourself and just, like, cutting out shit and sticking it into your book.
Madam.
Okay, my turn. Monica, which is in this book by Hira Lindsey Bird.
Cool.
Hira Lindsey Bird, I guess.
Yes.
which is another one that I've heard a lot about from, like, discerning ladies of the internet.
I feel like I see the cover a lot.
Whereas I feel I hear the name a lot. So between us, we have
oh.
a whole book.
I was going to say, like, I feel like I've seen the cover more than I've seen people talk about the poetry.
Interesting. Yeah, this was okay. I didn't really like this.
I mean, I don't I hate Friends.
Me
so
too.
So the poem Monica is named after Monica Geller, and the first line of the poem is like, Monica, 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 Monica.
Monica Geller of popular sitcom Friends is one of the worst characters in the history of television. She makes me want to wash my eyes with hand sanitizer, etc.
Etc, etc.
And this is 5 pages long.
It's a long boy, and it mostly has gone viral with just photographs of the first page.
Yeah, it was fine. I did not care for it. I don't know. It was fine. That's my review of this.
I feel like it feels just like a spicy take from the first time Friends came on Netflix, when we all realised, oh shit, this programme that I spent my entire teens watching, even though it was super fatphobic and I knew it was fatphobic and it's super homophobic and I knew it was homophobic, I wasn't like cognitively that aware of what kind of media I was
engaging with.
Yeah,
but in the middle of this poem about Monica from Friends, there's like some actual interesting shit. I just object to the way that it's bookended with like shit about Monica from Friends, who I don't care about. Yeah, about like, there's this kind of bit in the middle that begins, I fell in love with a friend once and we like to congratulate each other, what good friends we were, and that goes on for about a page, and that's actually the best bit, and I don't really get why it's in the middle of the thing about Monica.
Because she falls in love with Chandler, who's her friend.
Oh, is that it? Okay, I have not really engaged with Friends as a thing.
I respect that. Yes. Look at you, going against the grain.
Yes.
Okay? Marching to the beat of your own drum.
Yeah, I don't know why, it just really passed me by. I didn't watch it when it was on, and now I know it's horribly fatphobic, partly due to Monica.
Horrifically so, yeah.
So, yeah. I like the bit that she was inspired by Monica without the stuff actually about Monica from Friends. That's my review of this poem.
Thank you.
Super care for it, but yeah. I know a lot of people care for this collection greatly. Your turn.
We only have a couple left now. Oh, it's the poem that my brother read at my wedding. It's called The Orange by Wendy Cope.
Read expertly by Henry Slater.
He smashed it.
To the extent to which, I'm going to come out and say it.
Go on.
I did not like this poem until your brother read it at your wedding.
Yeah.
I'd read it so many times. And it always comes across so, like, trite and really,
twee.
Like, yeah, really twee.
It's
and then
twee.
Henry, who is not twee at all, read it in a way that was not remotely twee and really, I feel like, captured the essence of what is good about it. And I loved it when he read it.
The thing with this poem is that I completely agree. It does feel quite twee and safe and comfortable and
bouncy and
And it's just it's about being like smug about having a nice big orange. But the last line is, "I'm glad I exist," and like, I don't know what it is, man. Every time I read that, "I love you," "I'm glad I exist," just makes me well up.
Yeah,
it just hits me right in the chest.
I feel,
you know,
like I want to get to the ending without having to go through all the rest of the poem. But when your bro read it, I was like, I'm happy I'm here for the ride, you know? yeah, I don't know. I'm happy that I've now heard it in a way that did not bring out the more like twee elements. But yeah, I was very not into that poem. And now I've had it sold to me. And maybe that's, you know, a thing about poems is, they're not meant to be read on a page sometimes. Sometimes they live better when they're read aloud. I don't know.
No, 100%. 100%.
Like, I'm sure some are better written down.
Well, for example, someone who came up a lot when I was crowdsourcing for, like, viral poetry was Kate Tempest.
Yeah.
And she released a collection a couple of years ago. Well, it's not a collection. It's one poem. Let Them Eat Chaos. And she says explicitly at the beginning of the book, this is not designed to be read, it's designed to be listened to.
Like, yeah.
It is a performance piece, it's not a poem to be read in a book. And it basically, it just really urges you, if you've never heard it, don't read it, don't read this, this isn't for you if you've not heard it performed. And I went against her advice and I just read it and it did not touch me. I didn't enjoy it. And I was like, well, what was I expecting? Really?
I literally did the opposite of the thing I was told. Yeah. I think that's a thing. Next one. Oh, me.
It's you. It's your turn.
Home by Warson Shire?
I say, yeah.
I wasn't sure. I think there's bangs. I really think there's bangs. I think this, I feel like she is really like the tip of the iceberg, like the kind of the pointy pyramid top in terms of doing something that I feel a lot of people have tried to do over the last 5 years or whatever. I think the poems that she writes are incredibly specific, really powerful imagery, but aren't just images. It's like specificity as well.
That's it. Like with this poem, which is about the refugee crisis, she is able to articulate this incredibly kind of difficult, messy discourse surrounding this horrific thing that was happening in the news every day. Like, it was all over the place, and there were so many awful opinions and so much kind of ugly right-wing bullshit being touted by the media in the UK. And she was just able to articulate in the most beautiful human form.
Yeah, that felt very, like, truthful while also being, like, artistically valuable.
Yeah,
I don't know, I think it... I really think that Home is a great poem. And I'm very interested in her as a poet. Because, yeah, as I said, like, I feel like there is something very kind of authentic about her that a lot of people have tried to copy. So, yeah, I feel like it was that mix of being able to, like, communicate this thing that a lot of people were trying to kind of create work and thought around in a way that I think is a very enduring, useful artistic output. It's not, I don't know, it's neither just about the refugee crisis, nor is it just, like, a kind of ephemeral poetry moment. I think it's, yeah, I think Home is such a great poem, and she is a very wonderful poet. I think she's, like, very unique in that way.
She feels effortlessly zeitgeisty.
Yeah, I agree.
Effortless in so far as her work is so well realised, not that she bashes it out.
Exactly, yeah.
Case in point being that she still doesn't have a collection in the UK.
That's so wild.
She has a chapbook that Home is published in. But yeah, she doesn't have a full collection.
That is wild. That is wild. But yeah, I think she's great. Yeah, I love her. I'm happy anytime I read one of hers. As in, I'm not happy, but like, yeah, I feel like it does a really great job at what it's trying to do.
Final poem.
The final poem.
Which I realise this should be William Carlos Williams, unless I did not write it down.
Did you write plums in the icebox?
This is just to say.
And we've eaten our plums.
We've eaten our plums. We've talked about some poetry. We're done.
We're done.
This has been an unusual episode because we normally only talk about things that we already have opinions on.
Or even knowledge about. Yeah. Like, I literally don't know anything about poetry to the extent to which... Here is a mini anecdote which will expose you to how much I don't know about poetry. I kept seeing this Twitter account called Richard Syken Bot, and it had, like, vaguely kind of poetic-looking shit on it. And I don't know why. I guess because I'd never heard of this person. I'd never heard of Richard Syken. I just was like, oh, this is must be, like, a kind of made-up Twitter thing. And then one day I was like, I'm fed up with seeing this name on my timeline and not understanding what's happening. So I copied and pasted the name, and he's, like, apparently, like, a famous poet. But I literally never heard of him. Like, so much of poetry has completely passed me by. And I think it is partly because, like, I don't know... I don't want to be one of those people that's, like, going into a contemporary art gallery and being like, this is all shit, I don't understand it. Like, I don't want to be that for poetry. And so I just... don't really engage with it because I don't feel like I understand it. And like, obviously I won't like a lot of poetry, and that's fine, because I don't like a lot of fiction, or I don't read a lot of fiction that I know I won't like. But yeah, I just don't want to, like, disregard loads of it because I don't feel like I understand it.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, I don't know about you, but I quite frequently have conversations with people who don't read fiction and wish they did.
That's wild, because to me, like, I can't believe there are people that don't read fiction, whereas must be like that to people who are really into poetry. Like, I can't believe...
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, my response to someone who doesn't read much fiction is not, like, to just start recommending things, right? Like, you ask, okay, well, what movies do you like? What books have you read that you've enjoyed? What are you interested in? Like, what's going to, like, turn you
what
on?
What stories? What's
gonna get you
excited? Yeah.
I really enjoyed deciding what we would talk about in this episode.
Yeah.
And I feel like I intentionally didn't pick poems that have gone viral over the last year that were written specifically for political happenings. Because I thought we might, if we decide to do another episode, then that we might decide to cover those. I tried to pick stuff that's a bit more meme-y.
Yeah. No, I think you did great choices.
Thank you, friendship.
You are a great shepherdess of the pod. Well, thank you so much for joining us once again. I had a great time wrestling with this stuff I don't understand. I hope you enjoyed yourself, Alice.
I've had the time of my life, as per.
And I hope that you listening at home also enjoyed it.
And you know what? Treat yourself. Go get a plum.
Buy a plum. Don't buy Poetry Collection. Just get a plum. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.